Good afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson, and pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson present.
Representative Bennett? Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bowe? Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Keeler?
Keeler present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller present.
Representative Poston is excused. Representative Scott? Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz present.
Representative Bennett? Representative Bowe? Representative Scott? Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you, Isabel. Up next on the agenda, we have the approval of the minutes from the February 28th meeting. Representative Mueller, have you had an opportunity to review those minutes?
I have, Madam Chair, and I would move that we approve the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Members, if you could unmute yourself, all in favor of Representative Mueller's motion to approve the minutes from February 28th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Next up on the agenda, we have House File 3265, and Representative Howard will be presenting that bill. I move that House File 3265 be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Representative Howard, it looks like you have an author's amendment. I would move adoption of that A2 amendment. Okay, there you are. I could not see you, Representative Howard, for a moment, but now I see you on the screen that you are, in fact, here. So I move adoption of the A2 amendment. Members, please unmute yourself to vote on the adoption of the A2 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Members, we will have a time certain vote on this bill at 1:20 p.m. today. Representative Howard, please present your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. It's always nice to be in front of a committee you don't get the chance to be with very often, so thank you for this opportunity. Members from Warroad to Worthington, from Austin to Grand Marais, and everywhere in between, all our kids deserve safe drinking water at school. We have the opportunity and a duty to ensure that this is the reality at school fountains and faucets all across our state. Since the crisis in Flint, Michigan, we have seen a greater recognition of the danger of lead in our water. States are taking steps to test, mitigate, and address what is a pervasive problem for buildings that are older. But the reality is, with the availability of newer health data, considering what other states are doing in this arena, we can do better here in Minnesota. Children are most vulnerable to the damaging effects of lead because their bodies are still developing and absorb more of the harmful metal than adults. This is an issue that has impacted more so our diverse communities and rural communities, more so, and we know that from national data that unsafe lead levels are present in a significant share of our schools. This bill seeks to take the steps necessary to ensure that we are testing, and if need be, getting the lead out of drinking water of every school in this state. This is a realistic and achievable goal, but only if we work together to take this problem more seriously, coordinating at every level of government to do so. Just currently speaking, Minnesota schools are testing for lead and working in partnership with MDH and with MDE on mitigation strategies. However, we don't have a complete picture of the challenge because there is no centralized reporting. In addition, schools that have been tested are mitigating when levels of lead are at 15 parts per billion or higher. And to be clear, there's no safe level of lead in our water, but this is not a health-based standard. And as I'll talk about, there's more evidence and better evidence to inform what level we should be mitigating at here in Minnesota. The other challenge is that it can be costly to mitigate for lead. And it's not often as costly as a full lead service line replacement, but things like plumbing fixtures and fittings need to be replaced, and that can add up. And it's particularly a challenge for our rural school districts that don't have a large levy or property tax base to afford this mitigation, or school districts that have many and many aging buildings. And so this bill attempts to address these gaps in our current system in several ways. First, we will undergo some centralized reporting so that policymakers can get a better handle of the state of this challenge here in Minnesota. A national survey of school districts found that 37% of districts that tested for lead came back with elevated levels. How does that track with Minnesota? The answer is we don't know. And so that's why we need centralized reporting. Additionally, in this bill, we're moving the threshold for remediation from 15 parts per billion to 5 parts per billion. Again, there is no safe level for lead, but newer research has found evidence of harm when levels of lead are present above 5 parts per billion. Importantly of note, this is the max amount of lead contamination that the U.S. FDA allows for bottled water. And so it stands to reason that this is a good standard for the health and safety of our water in our schools. And other states are moving forward. Just recently, Washington passed a standard at 5 parts per billion, and that law in Washington passed with near unanimous bipartisan support. The other key part of this bill is funding. As I mentioned, it isn't cheap for school districts to mitigate for lead. Federal grants have opened up more resources to schools, but we think more support is warranted, especially if we're going to be expecting more testing and potentially more remediation. This bill includes grant funding through MDH, a program that aligns with funding that is included in Governor Walz's supplemental budget that makes those resources available to schools and to childcare facilities as well. I wanted to note, before 2021, schools weren't able to apply for federal grants. This new development means that federal agencies agree that it's not enough to just support testing. We need to treat the problem with appropriate protective measures, and adding in a state grant will help us provide that sustainable source of funding. Just a couple other points before I turn it to testifiers. I want to call out that there's already a lot of existing communication and partnership and great work happening between our school districts, MDH and MDE, to test, mitigate, and to make drinking water more safe. And with additional resources and better data collection, we believe this bill builds on that great work for the benefit of cleaner drinking water and healthier kids. The other thing I wanted to mention is that school districts have legitimate questions about the time and cost of remediation and how any new standards or requirements would work in practice. We had a good meeting and want to continue those conversations. We need to be partnering at all levels of government. And so to wrap up, we all can agree that safe water for our kids and our schools should be a goal. And I hope that we can agree that this bill is a step that we can move in that direction. With that, I would turn it to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Howard. First up, we have Molly Coding, and we will have time kept in the chat. There'll be a notification when you have 30 seconds remaining and when time is up. Please unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Molly Cotting. I'm a researcher, and last year I worked with legislators in Washington State to strengthen protections from lead in school drinking water. As the representative noted, there's no safe level of lead exposure. All exposures are toxic, and they accumulate in the body. Children are vulnerable to permanent cognitive, behavioral, and emotional damage at extremely small increases in their blood. Despite recent federal commitments to replace lead service lines, our school drinking water is still at risk of lead contamination from aging plumbing parts inside of buildings. So we deserve more comprehensive and strict protection. Our state has no centralized system to track lead testing results, so we don't know the full extent of our problem, but we do know it's pervasive nationwide, and we are not immune from the risk. If the Minnesota Department of Health can manage our testing data, we'll have a better picture of how many outlets have needed attention and the steps that are taken to fix the problem. Our current statute states that schools must act above an acceptable level, but we need to clearly describe what constitutes an unacceptable risk. This clarity helps schools protect students. Five other U.S. states have passed a 5 part per billion standard, and we can update our status to refer our statute to reflect the best current evidence on lead absorption from drinking water. This bill also designates sustainable and flexible funding. These grant dollars will support schools so they can place certified filters and replace those valves and fixtures. And finally, I probably am not surprising anyone here, but lead exposure is an environmental justice issue. While all students would benefit from the protections of this bill, those with disproportionate lead exposure burden stand to gain the most from tighter action levels and strong remediation protections. This bill addresses all of these problems, and I hope that we'll vote yes and strengthen our protections. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Steve Ring. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Steve Ring. I'm a volunteer on behalf of the Sierra Club North Star Chapter. I chair their Waters and Wetlands Stewards Committee. I also worked for 34 years at the Minnesota Department of Health, much of that doing lab analyses of probable toxins and pollutants. I speak in support of House File 3265. Also, I want to thank you, the legislature, for passing the School Lead Protection Bill in 2018. That was a big step forward, and it is the foundation for HF 3265. A major provision of this bill is a tighter, more definitive standard for lead exposure. Regarding lead exposure and impacts, it is now clear that the more we learn about it, the lower the standard must be. There is no known therapy for lead in the blood. Therefore, prevention of exposure is crucial. Virtually every agency, academy, and nation that advises on or regulates lead concentrations in drinking water has reduced its earlier recommended control levels. Many now advocate for the 5 parts per billion standard that this bill requires. As Representative Howard mentioned, the FDA requires bottled water to meet the 5 parts per billion standard. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends, and I quote, state and local governments should take steps to ensure that water fountains in schools do not exceed water lead concentrations of 1 part per billion. The 2018 Minnesota law required public reporting of lead testing results, but there was no standard format and no central repository for that information. The inclusion of those provisions in this bill will have huge benefits for protecting Minnesota kids. Elevated lead concentrations have been associated with low-income communities, both urban and rural. Reliable data will allow us to track trends and identify problems that might otherwise be missed. Thank you. Thank you for your time, and I ask that you support House File 3265.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll open it up for member questions at this point, and we'll just also note that there are representatives from the Minnesota Department of Health available for questions as well. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just wondering from Representative Howard, are there any groups that you know of that are in opposition to doing this?
Representative Howard.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, I'm not aware of any groups that are in opposition. As I mentioned, I had a meeting with representatives from school boards, associations, and schools, and they had some questions, and I think there's still, we want to make sure we're doing some work to make sure that if we're asking our school districts to complete testing, but it's in a workable format for them. So, but no known opposition to the bill.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Howard. Um, I, We would be interested in knowing if the School Board Association does have a position on this at some point. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Howard, thanks for bringing this bill. I was reading it last night and preparing for the hearing, and it made me think that I have three young boys, and when I send them to school, I, of course, think that the water that they're going to drink is going to be safe. And this just made me think to, I think, Mrs. Cotting, you said it's an environmental justice issue. Absolutely. I represent Edina. We're probably, of course, testing, I imagine. But what happens, I guess my question is, Representative Howard, if in fact you do find, if the school finds lead right now and they don't have the cost to fix it, what happens?
Representative Howard.
Madam Chair, Representative Edelson, under current law, there is at the 15 parts per billion, if they do testing, they can work with MDH and work on remediation strategies. But to the financial piece, I think that it's in, you know, there's a struggle. And some remediation isn't super costly. There's things like flushing of the water that can actually make a difference at certain points. But I know that some schools will simply turn off a faucet. That the form of remediation will be they just won't use that faucet, which isn't necessarily the best way to remediate in the long term. So I hope that gives a little clarity. Somebody from MDH or one of my testifiers might have a little better sense, the folks that are working directly with their schools.
It looks like Anna Schlepp might have a comment as well.
Yeah, hi, I'm Anna Schlepp. I work with schools through the Department of Health on lead testing and remediation. And when schools find lead in drinking water, there are a number of different steps that they can take. And the very first one that they'll take if they find elevated levels would be to make that fixture inaccessible to students and staff. So they might do what's called bagging and tagging to make sure that no one uses it while they're figuring out what remediation steps that they're going to take, whether that's flushing and then retesting or maybe changing the fixture or installing a filter.
Thank you, Ms. Schlepp, for that. And because we're coming up on time, we'll go to Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted the committee to know historically that under the Dayton administration and former Commissioner Brenda Castellius, we were able to get what is in law now, the reporting. But there was a lot of opposition back then, so I'm glad that Representative Howard has been able to move forward with this because we want safe drinking water for our children, no question. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Seeing no other questions, I renew the motion to refer House File 3265 as amended to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Chair Richardson, aye. Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, aye.
Representative Bennett? Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Representative Keeler? Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes aye.
Representative Poston is excused. Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasliwick?
Aye.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Madam Chair, there are 17 ayes and one excused vote.
With a vote of 17 ayes And zero nays and one excused vote. The motion prevails and the bill is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. And Representative Howard, thank you for presenting the bill today. And my apologies for not allowing you the final word on your bill. But as you can see, there's lots of support. Up next, we have House File 1808. Representative Berg, would you like to move House File 1808 to be referred to the Committee on Education Finance?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Berg, I think you have an amendment as well. Would you like to move Amendment H-1808A2 to get the bill in the preferred form?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to move that amendment.
Members, please unmute yourself to vote on the adoption of the A2 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Members will have a vote on this bill at 1:50 p.m. Representative Ferg, please explain your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Over the course of the past few weeks, we have heard some harrowing stories from students that have displayed incredible courage coming forward to tell their stories. Our children have been coming to school with trauma in their daily lives in one way or another for longer than we can likely quantify. And we know that the past 2.5 years of the pandemic have just exacerbated our students' mental health struggles. Many of our kids are not okay, and it is our responsibility to help find them the resources that they need in order to begin the path towards healing. To that end, this bill would ensure three ways to help our students. HF 1808 requires at least one full-time school counselor in every school building to help students receive the support they need outside of the classroom so that they can achieve academic success. It ensures that school counselors are providing academic and mental health support to the students and not performing other duties such as proctoring tests, supervising in the lunchroom, or filling in for other staff members. Our school counselors are an incredible asset to our students and should be available to them as needed. This language would clarify their roles within the school. HF 1808 would also require administrators to receive mental health training. Right now, all licensed educators are required to meet certain standards around mental health, such as early detection and suicide prevention. As most administrators retain a teaching license, they already meet that requirement. And this will just make sure that no administrator misses out on this crucial mental health preparation. Lastly, it appropriates money for aid for school counselors. Many of you may know that I have a very personal connection to this issue and that I struggled for years to advocate for my youngest son through the education system. And I couldn't for the life of me figure out why there were part-time school counselors spread across different campuses that were only available a couple of hours every other week. It wasn't until he reached high school that there was a full-time school counselor on site available to him daily. This was transformative to his educational experience, and I am so grateful to Mr. Hendricks. Madam Chair, I believe I have some testifiers I'd like to call on at this time.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Just as a reminder to testifiers, time will be kept in the chat. You will get a notice when you have 30 seconds remaining and when time is complete. Up first, I have Keela Kuhlers. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Keela Kuhlers. I am the 2022 Minnesota State School Counselor of the Year, currently working in an elementary setting in an urban school district, and I am a proud parent of a kindergartner who attends a Minnesota public school. I want to start speaking to you with my parent hat on. In researching an elementary school for my daughter 2 years ago, I learned that our home district, a large one, was like too many in Minnesota and did not employ elementary school counselors. I believe, based on my inquiry, this was not out of a lack of interest, but concerns of funding. As a result, I chose to enroll her in a neighboring school district that does have elementary school counseling. I'll tell you that my daughter does not have behavioral concerns. She does not have mental health diagnosis. She easily makes friends and she's on track academically. So you might wonder why I make this choice for her. You see, I know the indelible impact elementary school counselors have, not just on individual students, but on the whole learning environment. We impact educator practices, student outcomes, and are constantly focused on closing achievement gaps. If you can imagine, we are like the primary physicians in education, focusing on prevention, building skills and behaviors for wellness and future success. Elementary school counselors don't just service students after an identified concern. We do so much more. First, we support all students in a proactive way, from classroom lessons with objectives that build essential mindsets and behaviors, like assertiveness skills to ask for help from a teacher or stand up against bullying. We teach students to recognize their body's signals of strong emotions, equipping them with practice strategies to manage everything from frustration to test anxiety. We expand students' beliefs in themselves and build more relevance and realness to their education by connecting their current learning, interests, and strengths to future post-secondary and career opportunities, because career dreams don't start in high school. And these lessons are for every single student. Today alone, I will teach nearly 100 students, like in kindergarten, where we talked about an important celebratory date in their life that will come after years of hard work, 2034, when they will graduate high school. And over the past 5 years, targeted school counseling work has supported systemic change in my building. For example, the risk index for Black students with written behavior discipline referrals has reduced by 57%. Now, this past year, my district added a second school counselor to my building, and this reduced our student-to-counselor ratio to 1 to 300, which is close to our National Association's suggested best practice ratio of 1 to 250. Because of this change and our advocacy to decrease non-counseling tasks required of us, the number of delivered classroom lessons has more than doubled. Our year-to-date student contacts has increased by 45%. Our small group services service contacts is up 17% at the halfway point of the school year compared to entire school year numbers in years previous. You see, with adequate student-to-counselor ratios and being able to use our time to provide counseling services rather than perform other duties, we have been able to extend our reach to better support more students and impact their educational paths. To end, I put my parent hat back on. I recognize I have the power, knowledge, and privilege to choose a school with an elementary school counselor for my daughter. But student access to a school counselor should never be because of power or privilege. It should be a right for all students of Minnesota from the very start of their education. I thank you so kindly for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Sam Rushmeyer. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Samantha Rushmeyer and I'm a school counselor in the Pierce Public School District. Imagine this, I will set the stage for you. Before school starts, I have 6 8th grade girls in my office that come and check with me every morning. These girls continue to check in with me daily, even though I am the 9th through 12th grade school counselor. During the first few hours of the day, I meet with 3 students regarding their college goals, one student that is dealing with ongoing self-harm, and one senior girl that struggles with an eating disorder. I make a mental note to check on her during lunch to make sure that she was eating. I quickly run to my assigned lunch shift, and even there, I'm being pulled in all different directions to answer questions about the upcoming ACT and student registration for next year's classes. I return to my office after my lunch shift and have 17 new emails, 2 students that are waiting to talk to me, and a new voicemail. The rest of the day goes by in a blur, a sea of student faces, rushed emails, and quick phone calls. This is not even beginning to cover the tasks that I should be getting done, my preventative work. At a small rural school, I'm in charge of all tasks. I don't have a secretary, there is no career center, and there isn't anyone to assist with PSEO questions. You're also looking at 1/3 of the mental health support for grades 7 through 12 at my school. I'm the only person of color in my entire district. So if you guess that all students of color seek me out to speak with someone that they feel that they can relate to, you guess correctly. I have 400 students on my caseload officially and have to meet all of their needs in the areas of college and career readiness, academic issues, and social emotional concerns. Social-emotional concerns have more than tripled since I started working in schools 8 years ago. Every school counselor that I talk to feels incredibly burnt out, especially those of us in smaller communities with less resources. We are losing our best educators because master's-level counselors are having to work lunch shifts, run study halls, and take on the workload of 5 people, trying to meet unrealistic demands and expectations set forth by school boards and state policies. I absolutely love my students, but I know that I'm not meeting all of their needs alone. I haven't even been able to touch on the issue of cultural competency in the schools. We are now living in a time where educators that receive cultural competency training are run out of town by parents that are afraid of change and don't understand the intricacies of public education. But now is a time when we need it more than ever. Starting from the top, from school board members to paras and everyone in between, need to be trained on how to be culturally responsive and treat everyone with respect and equality. We need staff that are trained, and we need more staffing to meet the high demands of today's students. Thank you for your time today and your support for meeting our students' needs.
Thank you for your testimony. Moving on to public testimony, we have Bob Indahar. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Bob Indahar. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I'm not only representing MREA, but I'm representing MASA, MSBA, AMSD, and C in this testimony. I want to first thank our counselors for the work that they do, but I also want to express our concern about House File 1808. School leaders would love to have full-time counselors in their buildings, but in many cases, the funding is not there to support the service. This bill mandates a full-time equivalent counselor in every building, but there is no money to support this mandate. Furthermore, as with most areas in education, there's a shortage of school counselors in the state. So even if there were money available, many schools would still be out of compliance with this proposed law. Additionally, some of our rural schools with smaller student bodies may not have a need for a full-time counselor. In some schools, they may have a greater need for social workers or mental health workers. The detailed list of appropriate and inappropriate duties for a school counselor is very prescriptive and limiting. In many of our schools, people chip in and do multiple jobs. Describing the school counselor's job in state law with specific appropriate and inappropriate duties is too narrow of a focus for many districts and may lead to grievances. We appreciate our counselors and support them wholeheartedly, but to have a bill that mandates a counselor in every building without financial backing and without looking at the local needs of the school will further burden the districts with a financial deficit they cannot afford. This bill defines the duties of a counselor too tightly and will create many problems locally if passed. For these reasons, we are opposed to House File 1808 as presented today. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Moving on to member questions and discussion, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will echo what Mr. Indahar has discussed and presented to us. And I'm not sure why the author wants this bill to be so prescriptive, but I don't believe we have a surplus of counselors out there. And this bill is effective July 1, 2022. So perhaps I could ask the author of the bill to explain to us why there are so many appropriate and inappropriate duties listed in this proposal.
Representative Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson, for your question. I think the reason that we listed them is because we have spoken to over 1,000 licensed school counselors who are actually not working in a school at this time. So we do have an abundance of school counselors to apply and work in our schools. But the list is because these are some of the many things, as you heard our testifiers say, that our school counselors are being required to do. And while we understand that at times it can be helpful to have another body in a room, we really want to make sure that our school counselors are there to meet the academic and most importantly, mental health for our students. They cannot do that if they are proctoring tests, if they're driving a school bus, or if they're supervising the lunchroom. Our school counselors are licensed to do their job. They are passionate about helping the students, and they should be able to do so.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Berg, for that response. You might want to think more carefully, though, about if we're going to move forward with this policy. And of course, I think it's good to have and great to have counselors in our schools. But I don't think we're at the point right now where we have the ability, without the funding, of course, to proceed with this kind of requirement, because this is a mandate, and it's a huge mandate. So I just encourage you to rethink some of the, for example, the effective date and some of the requirements that you have included in this proposal if we're going to be successful in getting counselors in our schools. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson. I am absolutely open to looking more closely to the language in this bill. This was something that we wanted to make sure we brought forward and that I know is a top priority for the School Counselor Association. Happy to take a look at your suggestions. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I'm glad to hear Representative Berg talking about being open to this. I think that there are some specific problems with the bill, the date, and some others that Mr. Indahar brought up. And I would urge her to work in consultation with him and with the groups that he is representing to try to make this bill better. That said, I'd like to address some things in a more general sense. First of all, and I'm sorry that I have missed her name, but the first woman who testified, I'd like to ask her a question. We have social workers, we have psychologists, we have counselors. My belief is that, and she could maybe correct me if I'm wrong, that we rank in Minnesota at the very bottom of counselors per students in the country. Or if not 50th, we're like 48th, 49th. But consistently, we've been there unless it's changed recently. And part of the reason I've heard in the past is that we have these other groups, social workers, psychologists, and they essentially are taking the place of the counselors. Could she please differentiate for me what the differences are?
Ms. Kohlers.
Yes, thanks for that question. I can't really speak specifically to how other states employ or, you know, the pieces here, but I can tell you that Minnesota does consistently rank at the bottom, around 47th or 48th for the last several years for the student to counselor ratio nationally. And I can't speak to specifically how other districts are operating or how they use it, utilizing things. I think in my experience, I've seen that a lot of them do employ different social workers in the school building, sometimes school psychologists who typically work with special education students, working around diagnosis or developing their specialized education plans, as opposed to a focus on general education students. And several of them contract outside with other agencies in the community. But again, that's after there's an identified need or concern, whereas school counselor focuses is very much on servicing all students to provide them with skills and practice and resource from a more preventative standpoint, equipping them with skills for their both academics, and their career and college readiness, as well as their social emotional learning as well.
Representative
Erdahl. Okay, thank you. That clears it up a little bit for me. Just a question for Mr. Indahar. In light of the fact that we have consistently ranked near the bottom in school counselors across the country, I'm just wondering why he thinks Minnesota schools have not placed a higher priority in this area, or if he has, if he thinks they're relying on some other tools.
Mr. Indahar.
Thank you. I don't have a great answer for you. All I can tell you is that we have a shortage in many different areas, from teachers to bus drivers to counselors. And so we know, a couple facts. One is that there are mental health issues of children were here before COVID, and it just got exacerbated afterwards. So it's not the fact that we're in opposition of having counselors in the school. There's just some things that need to be worked out in order to make it workable within a school district.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Richardson and Mr. Andahar. And I appreciate those comments. But again, historically, Minnesota has not placed a high priority on school counselors. Problems come and go, but this has been consistent. And while this might not be exactly the bill to do it, I think this is something that we have to address in the near future. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Byrd, for bringing this bill. I do understand how important it is for our students to have access to full-time counselor services. This question is for Mr. Andahar. During your comments, you mentioned one of the things that you mentioned in opposition was that there may be certain cases where students don't need access to a full-time counselor. I didn't quite understand that. Can you give me an example of when a student wouldn't need to have access to a full-time counselor services?
Mr. Andahar.
Thank you. We have a lot of schools out there with low numbers of students. School districts share a lot of different services like psychologists and teachers, superintendents, because they just don't have the numbers of students to support a full-time equivalent. And my comment was to the point of a 1.0 full-time equivalent counselor. Perhaps it could be half-time or three-quarter time or something like that. That's what my comment referred to.
Representative Frazier.
That's all, Madam Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Andahar.
Seeing no other member questions, Representative Berg, I will give you the last word on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to add real quickly that there is an appropriation attached to this, and the commissioner must determine the statewide average salary for school counselors times the number of school districts and charter school sites serving students that don't have a counselor. So there is an appropriation piece to it in that sense. So just in closing, the severe anxiety that my son's academic struggles caused him as a child and that have followed him into young adulthood has been nothing short of heartbreaking to witness as a parent. It caused me once to discuss with our family doctor that I would rather have him never graduate from high school than to come home and find he had taken his own life. Our kids need adults in their life and in our schools that can help them navigate this often difficult journey called life. Adults who are trained to help our children through the lens of racial, gender, sexuality, and socioeconomic equity. Our children deserve the opportunity to thrive and to build and live great big lives in whatever way suits them. This bill is one step we can take towards ensuring that they get that chance. Thank you, and I look forward to the support of this committee.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Representative Berg renews the motion to refer House File 1808 as amended to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll on the bill. The chair votes aye.
Chair Richardson, aye. Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe?
No.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski? Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Poston is excused. Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, aye.
Representative Drazkowski? Madam Chair, there are 12 ayes, 5 nays, 1 absent vote, and 1 excused vote.
With a vote of 12 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails and the bill as amended is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Up next on the agenda, we have House File 3634, Representative Morrison bill. I move that House File 3634 be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Members will have a time certain vote on this bill at 2:15 p.m. Representative Morrison, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to present House File 3634, a bill to address the growing mental health needs of our students. Today is World Teen Mental Wellness Day, and the President of the United States recognized children's mental health as a national priority in his State of the Union address last night. So it feels appropriate that the committee is hearing these bills today, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to present this one. We knew that children's mental health challenges were rising prior to the pandemic, and they have clearly accelerated since that time. We can debate the reasons, but the fact is that our young people are needing more support than what we are currently providing them. If there are any silver linings to the pandemic, one of them is a growing destigmatization of mental illness and a recognition that mental health is health. Given that changing landscape and the clear need, now is the time to do everything we can to meet that need. There's been much discussion about the deterioration of our children's mental health over the prior few years. I think we all agree that this is a challenge that we must rise to meet. This bill provides a way to help identify those at risk and to connect them with the resources they need. As a reminder, I'd like to share some sobering statistics. Mental health emergency room visits among youth ages 12 to 17 increased by 31% between 2019 and 2020. And in 2021, emergency room visits for suicide attempts was up 51% among girls in the same age range. Some other data points provided by NAMI include that only one third of high school students feel they're able to cope with their sources of stress. One in three high school students and half of all female students report persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness. And two-thirds of parents report that their child has struggled with their mental health, and a third say that their child's mental health is worse than before the pandemic. House File 3634 requires that school districts develop a plan to conduct mental health screenings on students in grades K through 12. If the results indicate a potential mental health condition, the district must notify the student's parent of the results and of resources available to the student in the school or the community. The bill also bolsters student mental health supports in schools by making districts eligible to receive funds sufficient to fund two full-time mental health support staff positions for each 2,000 or fewer students. Mental health support staff positions include school psychologists, school social workers, school nurses, school counselors, and chemical dependency counselors. We have a generation of children who are living through unprecedented times and need extra support. Our kids are asking for our help, and we must meet this moment for them and with them. We have to approach this crisis from many different angles. Asking them how they're doing and identifying those at high risk is a first step. And then making sure they can access a mental health professional for a diagnostic assessment and treatment is the second step. What we cannot do is nothing. Our young people are struggling, and we need to support them so they can become healthy adults. Their future and all of our futures depends on it. Madam Chair, I do have two testifiers today. Jin-Yang Bang, who is a senior at Minnetonka High School in my district, and Christopher Prokosh, who is a medical student at the University of Minnesota and who provided the idea and inspiration for this bill, are here.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. We will just let the testifiers know that time will be kept within the chat. You will get a 30-second notification and a notification when there is time. Up first, we have Jin-Yang Bang. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hello, my name is Jin Bang, and I'm a senior at Minnetonka High School. To some, school is their only source of a hot meal, their only source of a quiet space to think and work, like where I currently am at school, their only source to a trusted adult. So similarly, whether it's through health class or the counseling office, school is often a student's only access to mental health education resources as well. I've learned a lot about the importance of mental health and clinical diagnoses like depression and anxiety in class, but I've never actually learned how to be tested or treated for any mental health illnesses that I would maybe be potentially be diagnosed with. And according to the National Institute of Mental Health in 2020, an estimated 60% of U.S. adolescents with major depressive episodes did not receive treatment in the past year, which is a really sobering statistic in contrast with adults, 66% of whom did receive treatment. And so we can see that through statistics and life stories, mental health concerns for adolescents are often overlooked and are identified, if at all, too late. So a mental health screening starting even from kindergarten will not only continue to ensure that students are mentally healthy, but will help identify and aid students who are currently struggling. So speaking more personally as a first-generation immigrant, my family recognizes the importance of mental health and therapy, but we simply don't have access to nor even know how to begin looking for a therapist. And so even though my school counselor can't provide any diagnoses, since I've actually started making use of the mental health resources, my mental health has improved immensely. So from friend drama to major world events that seem to occur and worsen every day, the only time I really have as a busy student and friend and daughter to actually use my energy to focus on my own well-being is with my counselor. And so I ask that you consider this bill that would not only provide those resources to schools and struggling students, but would allow a direct line for administrations to assess and aid their students' mental health. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Christopher Prokosh. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Christopher Prokosh, and I'm a second-year medical student at the University of Minnesota, and I'm working with Representative Morrison as a public health advocacy fellow. Before medical school, I worked for AmeriCorps College Possible in St. Paul, where I helped high-achieving first-generation high school students apply to college. During my year working with students, I witnessed some of the unique mental health challenges that adolescents face that were further exacerbated by shifting to online school as the pandemic began. I had students who were burdened as the primary caretaker for a handicapped parent, anxious about generating income for their family, and grieving the distance between themselves and their family on another continent. Some stressed about their lack of home internet access, others lost family to COVID-19. The pandemic increased screen time, decreased human interaction, and harmed students' mental health. The big question now is, what are we going to do about it? Beginning mental health screening at an early age in schools will both identify and care for those who are struggling and help youth across Minnesota understand the importance of prioritizing mental health. As a future medical professional, House File Number 3634 is crucial to addressing the mental health challenges that students face and will serve as an important step and helping today's youth emerge from this pandemic to live fulfilling and healthy lives. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll move on to member question and discussion. First, we have Representative Wasilwick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Morrison, for bringing this bill up. I think it's a really important conversation to be having about the topic of children's mental health. I do have one question. I just was looking at the bill language, and I'm wondering, one of the concerns that I have as someone who's worked with kids in schools is I see that parents can opt out of the screening, but I have concerns that if there might be an abusive situation at home, that a school telling a parent about a mental health concern that their kids have could lead to, further harm to the student. And so I'm wondering if that was a piece of the conversation or if you'd be open to maybe thinking about that issue in terms of the language in the bill.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Wasilwick, for sharing your own professional experience as well. That did come up in conversations with NAMI about this bill, and it is one that we're working to figure out how to address. Thank you for mentioning that.
Representative Wasilwick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Morrison, for working on that. I appreciate it.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is for the author of the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Morrison, so screenings cannot occur unless there is the correct staff employed. Is that correct?
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson. Well, the bill calls for both things to happen at the same time. So by this bill, yes, the screenings would begin when mental health staff is in place.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is not a for sure. This is dependent on whether or not there's staff. Is that correct?
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson. That, the way it's written currently, that is my interpretation. I may defer to Ms. Parra, who from research, who helped me in drafting the bill.
Ms. Parra.
Yes, Madam. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yes, the screening is required if the school district is receiving the funding.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Morrison, I find, and we'll talk about this in finance, I guess, if it advances to finance, but I find this new way to fund just a really challenging new part of school funding, because we already have so many complications in our school funding, and I'm afraid that this funding that you're requiring, let's see, it's called, well, it's a new revenue source for mental health professionals. So I just think it's going to raise some issues that I hope that you think more carefully about how this probably should be enacted for our parents and our students and our school communities to understand how this funding is working. So I'm going to continue to study that and we'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson. I'd be happy to talk offline more with you about that. I think the idea was to not create an unfunded mandate for our schools.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Morrison, a couple of questions. Just wondering what the thought process was for having an opt-out rather than an opt-in for the parents.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott. You know, I think the feeling is that mental health challenges are so prevalent among our students right now that it's better to capture the ones who are at risk than not. But for families who wanted to opt out, that option is there for them.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in cases like this, when you're dealing with something so sensitive as a child's mental health, I think it's really better for it to be an opt-in. The other question I have is, so what happens, how is this data classified once it's collected on the child?
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott. I suspected you might ask that question. I think, honestly, that speaks to the need for having a permanent school nurse position at MDE so that we can develop good guidelines and appropriate techniques for managing data, but particularly sensitive mental health and other health data. So we're working on that aspect of the bill. Thank you for elevating it.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So technically this data would be considered student data, so it would go in the student's file. Madam Chair and Representative Morrison, were you thinking of having this data shared with the Minnesota Department of Health?
Representative Morrison.
Madam Chair and Representative Scott, I actually might need to defer again to Ms. Parra. I don't remember exactly if we included that in the bill, but obviously this is medical data that is private.
Ms. Parra.
Thank you, Madam Chair members. The bill doesn't provide for sharing the information with any agency. So any particular student's data would be treated the way any other student, you know, personal data would be treated. If there's any non-public data that would come out of that, that could be shared, but the bill language doesn't speak to that.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I asked that question knowing that the bill didn't share it, but you mentioned, you know, that you wanted to work with the Department of Health to come up with something on the student, on this data piece. And, you know, this is such, I guess I just have to say, if that is ever the thought of sharing this data with the Minnesota Department of Health, that you know, obviously you'd have to come back to the legislature to get permission to do that. And then that data would have to be classified, but, you know, there would have to be full consent. I guess that brings up another question. So the parents, if this is an opt-in or an opt-out, these screenings can go ahead and take place without the parents' consent? To Representative Morrison, Madam Chair.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Scott, the bill is written so the parents are notified prior to the screening.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. So just some food for thought that I would highly oppose this being shared with the Department of Health. Our kids aren't guinea pigs. I'm not a big fan of this anyway, but I guess an FYI for everybody that if this data is ever, if somebody comes back with a bill where they want this data to be shared outside of the school building, outside of that child's student record, I would have a lot of heartburn over that. So thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me the line of questioning.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and this question is for the bill author.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to just quickly ask a question. I was reading through the bill about the screenings and how the Commissioner of Education may provide districts and charter schools with sample mental health screenings. Is there a screening that's nationally recognized or something that is used by other mental health practitioners that, you know, that would be able to be seen by parents or that we would know what's going on? I just wanted to know what these screenings would look like. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mueller. That's a great question, and one that I'm working with NAMI with. We'd want it to be a verified tool, and certainly it would be available to parents ahead of time. But again, speaks to having some kind of permanent medical staff at MDE to help the commissioner to provide that to schools and districts.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's all I have.
Seeing no other hands of members, I will give Representative Morrison the last word on her bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to present this mental health screening and resource bill for our students. I especially want to thank the testifiers for their bravery and for their collaboration on this effort. I hope you all will support student mental health and support the bill. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. I renew the motion to refer House File 3634 to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Chair Richardson, aye. Vice Chair Hassan?
Hassan, aye.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe?
No.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston is excused. Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, aye.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes, 7 nays, and 1 excused vote.
With a vote of 11 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. The last bill on the agenda today is House File 3655, Representative Jordan's bill. I move that House File 3655 be laid over for possible inclusion in a committee omnibus bill. Representative Jerkins, it looks like you have an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that you would like.
If you could move that, please.
I move adoption of the A1 amendment. Members, please unmute yourself to vote on the adoption of the A1 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Jerkins, please explain your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what this bill does and what the amendment just changed in the bill, the initial bill would require schools to provide substance misuse awareness training or awareness and prevention instruction at least once to students. And what this, after consulting with some of my colleagues, I softened that from the word must, and what we changed in the amendment that was just adopted is that the schools are strongly encouraged. I would prefer not to water that down, but I also realize that many of us get heartburn when dealing with unfunded mandates on the schools. So we changed that for that purpose. As most of you know, we're at epidemic levels with specific drugs like fentanyl. We're losing our young people, and some of the ways that they're getting a hold of this drug is through social media. They're buying the drugs on Snapchat and other social media platforms like that. I have a couple of testifiers here that are going to tell their stories, and I think when you hear those, you'll understand why it's so important that we get as much information out to our young people as possible. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn this over. I have two witnesses or two testifiers, Bridget Noring and Nancy Sack, and I'll leave it up to you who to call on, please.
Thank you, Representative Jorgens. I will just note for the testifiers that our committee administrator, Sydney Spreck, will be keeping time in the chat, and we'll give you a notice when there's a 30-second or 30 seconds remaining, and also when time is up as well. First on my list, I have Nancy Sack. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Nancy Sack, and I live in rural Blue Earth County. The reason I am here today is because last year, my 21-year-old grandson died from fentanyl poisoning homicide. Travis was a good-looking kid. He was smart and funny and outgoing. Growing up, he had his family, his best friend and cousin Andrew, two brothers, and a good number of friends who have stayed close to our family to this day. Travis and his friends started experimenting with vaping and marijuana in about the 7th grade. Travis moved on to Adderall and quickly got caught up with other pills. Most of this started in the school and on school grounds. Our family all worried about Travis, and we asked for help many times from people we thought would know what to do. We talked to doctors, therapists, and even some law enforcement. Everyone just kind of shrugged their shoulders and really didn't seem to know what to tell us. Before Travis turned 18, he started having more problems in school, skipping and getting caught with marijuana and other things. So Travis's mom, Kim, and his aunt, Katie, contacted the school, and after many meetings with the help of an alternative high school principal and counselor, they got him into a juvenile treatment center. But it was not quick. It was not a quick or easy process. There was very little follow-up when he was released, and Travis tried, but soon he was back where he started. Many things happened in the following few years, and unfortunately, I don't have enough time to tell you all about it. But that part of his journey ended for us on February 24th in 2021. That is the night Travis's heart stopped beating at 8:55 p.m. and our family's lives changed forever. Please, we need to get the substance misuse awareness, and prevention instruction into the schools early while their brains are still developing and ingrain in them better ways of handling the pressures and stresses of everyday teenage life. We need to stop the stigma and shame of this disease, and I think education is the only way that we're going to be able to do that. I ask you to support this bill and help us get that into the schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sack, for your testimony today, and our condolences to you and your family for the loss of Travis. I work in the SUD field, and I've heard a little bit of Travis's story, and I appreciate all of the work that you and your family are doing in support of this. Next up, we have Bridget Noring. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bridget Noring. On April 4th, 2020, my family lost our 19-year-old son, Devin Noring. He was found unresponsive in his bed throughout the course of the investigation. We were informed that he had gone on Snapchat the night before with the young man he was with. They purchased what they believed was a Percocet. That pill turned out to be 100% pure fentanyl. The young man that Devin was with, for whatever reason, locked Devin's bedroom door, told Devin's younger brother that he was sleeping, and proceeded to leave. He never alerted us to anything going on, even though he had attempted to render aid to Devin. So like many parents in our shoes, we didn't know what illicit fentanyl was. We didn't know how easy and how readily available it is via social media such as Snapchat. That is the main reason why we have remained so outspoken, is to prevent even the loss of just one life, preferably more. Knowing that Devin's death and the others could have been prevented is what keeps us moving forward. We've been working with our United Way of Hastings, trying to raise as much awareness in our community, but we are not getting into the schools where this education is fundamental. We lost over 1,000 lives in 2020. Children as young as 13. We need this bill. We need this in our schools. We have to educate our children. We have to give them every tool, every resource available, so that we can stop the loss of these human lives. These are our future. These are potential workers, voters, law enforcement officials, schools, teachers, judges. I thank you, and I am so honored and privileged to have this moment today, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Noring, for your testimony today and our condolences to you and your family related to Devin as well. Thank you for sharing your story with us. Moving on to our member questions, I see that Representative Christensen has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Jurgens, for bringing this up. My husband and I have worked with young people at the middle school and high school level for decades now, and we both recognize the problems that are in our high schools. And it's not only drugs, but just alcohol. So thank you for bringing this up. I am definitely with you on it, and I will be signing on as a co-author. It's so important to have connections at the schools for these kids to be able to reach out and learn a little bit more about themselves, about their addictions, if that's the case. So thank you very much.
Representative Jurgens, any?
Thank you, Representative Christensen. I look forward to having you sign on.
Representative Adelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jurgens, I echo Representative Christensen. Great bill, and thank you to the testifiers for being here. I know you're making your grandson and your son proud by being here. It's not easy to come and testify in front of these committees. I guess the one question I do have, I know when I was growing up, Representative Jurgens, there was, we all remember DARE. Remember that? I'm curious. I think I had students look into this. Do we know what it looks like right now, the training about substance abuse across the state of Minnesota in our schools.
Representative Jergens.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the question, Representative Adelson. I think that that varies from school to school on how they use the funds necessary with the DARE officer. This would be an enhancement. This would be more classroom instruction, and it would be some of the information that is specifically would need to be covered is the use of social media, like Ms. Norton was talking about, her son Devin, how he was able to go on to Snapchat and to purchase these pills. And that still is happening today, even though the CEO of Snapchat has been called up in front of the United States Congress committee hearings. It's still, and they've committed to working on it. It's still an issue. So it's tying the education to some of the specific problems that we're facing today.
Representative Adelson.
I will sign on as a co-author as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, Representative Jergens, I will give you the last word on your bill.
Well, first of all, Chair Richardson, thanks for hearing this bill today. I appreciate it, and thanks for the testifiers and the questions. As I said at the beginning, we're at epidemic levels with fentanyl in particular, but other drugs in our schools as well. And it falls on all of us to be part of the solution. It falls on us as legislators, falls on parents, law enforcement, but schools are definitely part of that. And that's what this bill tries to address, is to get the schools strongly encouraged to be involved with that education process. Who knows what would have happened with the lives that have been lost if those students had better access to information before that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jergens. House File 3655, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in a committee omnibus bill. Members, just as a reminder, Monday, March 7th, we will have a brief update from the Minnesota State High School League, and we also have three bills on the agenda for that day. There being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.